Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
With the thoughts I'd be thinking, I could be another Lincoln if I only had a brain. Come on, you know what? I could tell you why.
Could tell you why. What's next?
The ocean. The ocean's near the shore. I could think of things. I could think of some things I never thought before. And then I'd sit. And then I'd sit.
Hep-a-cha-bum.
And think some more.
I'd say.
I would not be just a nuffin. My head all full of stuffin. My heart all full of pain. And perhaps I deserve you. And be even worthy of you if I only had a brain.
Welcome to Free State, everybody. I don't really necessarily always do this, but I want to take you inside the Free State sausage factory this morning. Last Wednesday, I was in town. And I was walking by government buildings when I saw the gathering of a big crowd outside government buildings. And I went up and I checked my phone and I saw that Leo Varadkar had announced his resignation and was resigning as Taoiseach, and he was delivering his emotional speech outside government buildings. And I immediately texted Joe and said, Joe, we need to do, I was giddy. I was a little bit giddy outside, and I said to Joe, we need to do a podcast on this. And Joe said two things. He said to me, he said, we're not the news, he said, and then he said, we'll stick to the plan. Now, I agreed with him, we're not the news. It came as a huge surprise to me to learn that there was a plan and that we were going to stick to it. But we're going to talk about this in a bit, but it was just that once that momentary giddiness passed, I realized that, you know, and I say this with huge, huge, overwhelming reluctance. It pains me to my very core to say this, but Joe Brawley was right.
I mean,
you take that in your stride.
There have been all sorts of things happening in you've read the headline in the Telegraph: after scandal and disloyalty, will William's first butler finally break him?
Good question.
These are important matters. And I mean, in the North, I mean, the loyalists are aflame in very much the same way as the sort of the burgeoning hate movement is aflame. No King Charles commemorative shortbread because the protocol was bad enough. Then no miniature Scotch thistle for Maisie at the Donaghadee Garden Centre.
Mm.
And now, two things. In the last week alone, no talking parakeets.
What?
No talking parakeets for Bertha and Balamoney. And no mini shampoo bottles in the... Yeah. Because of the perfidious, the evil protocol, which these must surely be the last straws for the United Kingdom. I mean, Jim Allister of the TUV, who is really the voice of what used to be loyal Ulster now, I mean, one of the few voices, he has been tweeting and asking questions in Stormont, important questions. about the owners of parakeets who are facing very serious problems importing them to the north of Ireland. And Kate Hoy, his old friend, with whom he has wasted shitloads of money in the Supreme Court, said this week that TUV leader Jim Allister, King's Counsel, knows someone, and this is where I speculate it's Bertha from Ballymoney, who shows birds in GB and arrived back in Belfast, brace yourself for this, only for her birds to be sent back to England to be quarantined at her own expense. So much for the DUP saying there's no sea border.
How many? Well, that's one unhappy parakeet owner.
I mean, you know that there was a fellow from Mara Felt one time, and he was working out in East Africa, and he was working for one of the big energy companies, and he wasn't able to get home for Christmas, but his mother was very fond of pets, and she had various wee birds, and she had a couple of puppies, and she had cats on the house. And so as a compensation, it was his first Christmas away from home. He couldn't get home just because of the overtime that he had to work, whatever project they were bringing home. So he sourced and bought a very rare talking parakeet, an East Angolan talking, one of the rarest parakeets in the world. You know, it cost him about $3,000 American dollars. And it was very carefully shipped back to Mara Felt in South Derry, you see. And then he rang on Christmas night and said, well, did you get the bird? And his mother said, we did, son. It was delicious. And he said to her, Jesus Christ, mother, he says, that's one of the rarest birds in the world. That's a talking parakeet. It speaks fluent English. In fact, it speaks three different languages fluently. And his mother says, Jesus, son, you'd think he would have said something.
That is the great tragedy that's unfolding because of the Windsor Agreement.
And what if the parakeet can't talk? And then, I mean, this week, Lord Dodds, the DUP's Lord Dodds, said, this is yet another example of how Northern Ireland is subject to foreign laws. And the wee lad who Bryson, James Bryson, he said, now our European overlords have decreed we can't even have tiny shampoo bottles in our hotel room. Well, I will tell you this. I will continue to have tiny shampoo, but if necessary, I will bring them. I will bring them to my hotel room.
It's good that you just do Ian Paisley for everyone.
The important thing is to get the... And you think to yourself, like, are we in such a brainless society that these are the things that we allow to occupy ourselves, you know? And which I think, you know, brings us in to Leo Varadkar. You know, I quite like Leo. But I think the point I was making to you was it would be different. We could drop everything if Leo had been in the midst of some important, momentous political project, you know, where he needed to get to the end of it. And for some reason, for some great tragedy, wasn't able to get there. You know. But that's not so. I mean, my point to you was, it won't matter a damn next week whether Leo was the Taoiseach or not.
Well, the extraordinary thing about that was that it didn't even matter a damn 24 hours later when, you know, I'm not even sure it was leading the news. And, you know, they had moved on. Like I heard, you know, and people were speculating about what his reasons were for leaving and that kind of thing. And I was listening to the news that evening and somebody said, one of the presenters said to their panel of political commentators, they said, and now for the $64 million question. And I said, this is it. We're going right here now. We're going to get the good stuff. We're going to get the juice. Finally, some red meat here. And he said, who is going to be his successor? And that sense of it being a game, and just being, as a friend of mine said, like that kind of giddiness, which is basically just somebody they work with is leaving their job. You know, that kind of like the way an email might go around work. Do you hear that so and so is off to, you know, it's going to work for Facebook. You know what I mean? Or whatever. Like it's
a very good point, because really what we see now with Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil is it is essentially a PR agency that's in government. The important thing is not to disrupt the markets, you know, to let the vulture funds, to let the elites, the corporations do what they're doing. And we will just stay away from that. You know, we'll go to Davos, we'll shake hands, we'll make high-minded sounding speeches every now and again, you know. And I mean, it's, I think what summed it up in a way for me, because I mean, Leo is, you know, I mean, his hero was Margaret Thatcher. He went into politics very young, you know, very, very presentable. He had a lot of advantages in Water Ireland as a gay man, an openly gay man, you know, he had a lot of personal popularity. And then, you know, he's never elected as Taoiseach. You know, it's all machinations behind the scenes to get him there. And then the rotating Taoiseach idea, which was sort of anyone but Sinn Féin.
And well, no, he's elected as Taoiseach the same way anyone in a coalition is.
Yes, but I mean, never went to the people and was elected in that sense. You know, it was behind the scenes deals that brought him there.
But he, well, yeah, well,
I, you yeah, know, well, I sort of, for me, sort of emblematic of it all was Ryan Tubridy in the Mail. Watching Leo reminded me of my own liberating decision quickly. You know, as if politics, you know, is about. It is a sort of a soft soap opera, and that is the problem. Rather than something where people go in for a life of service and humility, and who go in there to improve the lot of everyone. I mean, Tony Groves, he said, I thought it was very funny, he said, you know, all flags are to be flown at half-mast outside KPMG, Ernst & Young, PwC, and David Stockbrokers.
But, like, the Ryan Tubridy analogy, like if Ireland is RTE in this situation, and you know, we look at what happened shortly after Ryan Tubridy left the Late Late Show in RTE, and what happened and all that, not all of it by any means Ryan Tubridy's fault or problem, but at the same time we know what happened there. And if Leo Varadkar is going to be Ryan Tubridy and the people Ireland is going to be RTE, we can, you know, there's a lot of pain on the way, because it showed an incredible lack of self-awareness to
that's the sort of thing. I mean, and that's what I got to know Leo pretty well. I'm very fond of Leo. I like his husband Matt very well. I think he's a very funny guy, very capable guy. But my overall feeling was, because I met him first when he was a health minister, whenever I was pushing a new organ donation bill and had really drafted it for them. And I had been brought into that inner circle through the sort of the fame that had followed, you know, the my own organ donation. And Jerry Buttimer, who's now the sort of the highest ranking Fine Gael member in the Senate, with whom I am very friendly and I'm very, very fond of Jerry. He had worked like a Trojan to get me into the health minister's office. I had gone there with the leading consultants in across various disciplines from the main transplant hospitals in Ireland, and we had done it properly. And it came to a standstill with Leo. And I could see very strongly that Leo was thinking to himself, how will this work for me? Is it complicated? Is it a feel-good triumph? No, it would have been a feel-good triumph, and that's what I was saying. I said, look, this is a clean winner. We don't have an organ donation bill. You know, you can copy what we're getting ready to do in the North and in the UK. All of the sort of intricate detail is there. But, I mean, this is a clean winner. I mean, you're demythologizing organ donation. You're spreading a message of love, of hope, of giving life to others. When your race is run, there's no downside here. And I could see him figuring out what's the catch. And also it would have required a fair, you know, I mean, not that much work really, because he's got his draftsmen and all who were there for some.
And what do you think he was thinking, what the catch is? What was he?
I just think he thought it might be a lot of hassle and it might be a lot of problems. And that's why I had brought, you know, a very broad spectrum, David Hickey, the sort of our foremost, you know, organ donation expert. You know, I'd brought 9 or 10 of the leading consultant surgeons, you know, and there it was. And, you know, the overall problem with Leo was that he simply managed the press and the PR side of things, and throughout his tenure, inequality has flourished. Poverty is now reaching record levels. We have record homelessness. I mean, sure, you know, like everywhere else in Western Europe and in America, you can put a veil on that and you can create an image of prosperity. You know, Ireland, the third highest GDP in the world, people say, wow. But I see the poverty in Dublin. I mean, you get on the red line and you'll see it. You'll see the destitution, the drug addiction, you know, the poverty. Before we started today, I just put together some figures. In June 2017, when Leo became the Taoiseach, there were just under 8,000 people homeless in Ireland. Okay. The average house price was €258,000, and the average monthly rent was €1,000. Okay. Which was exorbitant and shocking then. Homelessness has doubled now. The average house price has gone up to almost €400,000, and monthly rent has gone from 1,000 to 1,600. And people are suffering, you know, and I couldn't help but think back to what Leo said about Michael Collins. You remember what he said about Michael Collins? He said, what happened to Michael Collins kind of proves to me that even, you have to do this in his voice, I'm thinking of Oliver Gallen. What happened to Michael Collins kind of proves to me that even revolutionaries need the confidence of the markets. Jesus Christ.
This is the thing with Leo, and like in some ways I'm baffled by everybody sort of projected something onto him, and like to me his big problem was a kind of a passiveness in the face of these issues, which you can see and you can rightly be angry about in terms of housing, of health, of various things, of inequality, as you say. But it is a kind of a lazy sort of just adherence to those sort of key principles. Yeah, like the markets will take care of these things.
Yeah, exactly. And it's then the shock and surprise that happened when the crash came, you know, when Ireland was on its knees and then austerity was imposed on the people. The people have never recovered from that. You know, the really quite severe levels of poverty that there are all across our island now, you know, north and south. I mean, Joanne O'Riordan, who you know, Joanne, who's she's a very sparky, feisty disability campaigner and an outstanding sports journalist, as you know, and she said this week, you know, for me, Leo will be remembered as a leader who did not make life better for most people, renters, homeowners, carers, health workers, people with disabilities, you know, and she recalled his famous phrase. He said, you know, we in Fine Gael shall never forget those who get up at 6 a.m. in the morning to go to jobs that keep the market afloat. Mm-hmm. You know? And she said, look, I have a slight caveat. You know, he genuinely was pleasant to talk to the few times I met him. And you see, in our politics now, in a way, particularly if you're in that sort of neoliberal Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil movement, the important thing is to be able to conduct yourself as Micheál Martin can and as Leo can. I mean, Leo went to the White House there and, you know, it was his last act. I think he probably knew it was his last act. And I thought he covered himself in glory. mean, he spoke in a way that the American president has not been spoken to about Gaza. Mm. And I think that people in Ireland felt justifiably proud at what we saw as his courage and you know, the deftness with which he handled what was undoubtedly a very tricky situation. You know, but that's not the real business of politics. The real business of politics is a political project that is designed to make people's lives better. You know, where is that? If someone said to you, look, what did Leo achieve while he was in office? You say, well, you know, he, I suppose he, you see what I mean?
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Me?
Yeah, well, you see, the thing about that, and it's interesting you say about what he said about Gaza when he went to see Biden, because when Leo looked best, it was actually when you kind of looked around the world and saw the amount of jokers and clowns that are in positions of power, and he has a competence. He has an ability to, and you know, it's something we'll come back to. We talk about Simon Harris. So, like when Brexit was happening, when COVID happened, probably COVID being the best example because everyone was frightened. You had Boris Johnson in Britain, and we take in so much of what's happening in Britain. We had so much signs there of somebody just freewheeling and just not caring. And then you had Trump in America and you had Leo standing there kind of talking plainly and being able, and that great thing, that sort of slight lack of ability to emotionally connect, which I've known, like I only met him a couple of times.
Yeah, he's very,
and
very
I found well, that I, it's kind of, it's a strange, paradoxically endearing how he just says whatever is in his head. And he delivered it, you know, when he talked about lockdown and COVID, he did just talk about what we're going to have to do. Whereas you could see someone like Boris Johnson, who was so desperate to be liked, he couldn't really make any tough decisions until it was too late.
Yeah, I mean,
so those were the moments Leo's when he's
a far better class of man than Boris. You know, I mean, I think that, you know, there's no comparison between them. And you know, Leo would have nothing like, I mean, Leo is a qualified doctor. You know, he's married to a very well respected cardiologist, you know, and he, you know, is a totally different class of person from Boris, you know. But there are, of course, similarities in the neoliberal project and just allowing the markets to dictate so that, you know, the funds were always encouraged. The destruction of the housing market for ordinary people. You know, the inability of our young people to afford houses. The fact now that 75% of our people up to the age of 35 years of age are living at home with their parents when they're at home. You know, all of these things, which are, of course, part of a trend that's occurring across the world, save for the Scandinavian countries where they've taken what we would see as very radical measures to deal with the problem. You know, but none of that was part of Leo's political program. Leo's political program was day to day to look well, to sound well, to have his bit of banter back and forth on the floor of the Dáil, you know, about Sinn Féin IRA and all the rest of it. And be there. I mean, be there and to present a face, essentially almost an ambassadorial role for Ireland with the corporations and big business and with governments around the world. And from that point of view, from the PR point of view, he could handle that well. But I come back to the point. What did he achieve?
Well, I guess the one thing you can say is that because of the crises that have happened, especially since COVID, that keeping things going was an achievement. I agree with you. I think I'm amazed at how housing, like, and you talk about, you quoted the figures there, but I remember, like, before that, Simon Coveney, who was housing minister at the time, was talking about having, you know, wiping out homelessness by the end of, you know, by the middle of I think it was 2016 or 2017 maybe. And you look at how it's gone, it's out of control. But for so long, again, there was a passivity around that issue that seemed to think, well, we just need to, you know, the markets will take care of this, supply will take care of this in a way that we don't have to do a huge amount more. And I remember going on I think it was 2018, there was an eviction. I don't know if you remember, there was an eviction just off Parnell Square of people who, I think there were a group called a campaign group. I think they were Take Back the City. They'd been occupying a vacant building and they were evacuated, or they were evicted by evacuated.
You sound like Elon Levy.
But they were forced out by these people wearing balaclavas, and there was a huge protest there. I think the next night, I can't remember the exact timeline, but I went down to this protest, and I hung around it. And it was students, it was young people in general, it was lots of people who were clearly concerned about housing. And we marched from that house to another one up near Mountjoy Square, I think we went to. And the thing that struck me walking back along, and these are all people from all demographics, if you like. It just clearly triggered conversations amongst everybody, and everyone you listened to was talking about their own housing situation, you know, and they were all people, mainly young people, and they were all in some version of a precarious situation.
Absolutely.
And the failure to grasp what that would mean for every kind of buy-in you actually ask for from people, in terms of working hard, in terms of even once COVID came, like this sense that companies wanted to get people to go back to the office, go back to work. What are you going to work for if you're going to be renting at the age of, if you feel you're going to be renting at the age of 65 or 70, if you're never going to own a house, have that security? And yeah, that's the thing that they seemed to be unaware of, or maybe you're right. I'm not so convinced it was an ideological adherence to the markets as much as just a kind of a failure to appreciate how serious this is and how serious, and it's globally, it's a serious issue, but I just don't think they appreciated that.
The worst thing that anyone can say about a politician was that he had a steady hand, you know, because unless you move quickly, I mean, a corporation will die if it has a steady hand, you know, you know, that's just not how the world works. The worst thing that you can say, and that's what people say now, trying to sort of find some praise for you with a very steady hand, you know, very steady hand on the tiller. Simon Harris, you have a very steady hand on the tiller. And what the establishment means by that is that it was a matter of sheer good luck that parts of the economy, okay, parts of the economy are in such a strong condition, are in such a robust condition. You know, our American multinationals, you know, the employment that that brings, you know, the spin-offs from that, you know, the GDP, which is a completely false sum, because it in our case reflects the vast amounts of money that have been sucked to the very, very top, you know, to the elites, to the millionaires and billionaires, you know, but it has absolutely no application in the vast majority of areas of our country. And instead of dealing with things like that, it was better. And I think that the recent referendum was a classic illustration of Fine Gael thought, Fianna Fáil thought, okay, particularly sort of Fine Gael. The idea behind that was this: look, we're struggling very badly. It looks as though it's going to be wipeout at the next general election, probably autumn, winter this year. And this was thought, look, let's revisit the same-sex marriage. Let's create that sort of, you know, feeling of unity and joy and excitement in the country. Let's have a sentimental triumph, you know. Mm-hmm. So what we'll do is we'll have a sort of a half-baked, we'll cook up, you know, two half-baked amendments. We'll, you know, and this has got to be a winner. I mean, let's get rid of this archaic misogynistic language about women's place being in the home, etc. There's a nice clean winner. And what we'll do is we'll throw in some very vague wording around carers and things like that. What we'll do is we'll have a lovely feel-good win like the same-sex marriage referendum. You know, we'll unite the nice people of Ireland and we'll give everybody a sugar high on the road to a winter election, and everyone will say, well, didn't Leo play a blinder through that referendum? Smiling and a modern Ireland, and look at our GDP, you know, and of course, you know, it was a disaster. And the idea of, you know, Leo stepping down being an earthquake, I mean, surely after such a disaster, wasn't really much room left for him.
Well, I take
no pleasure. I mean, I like him as a saint. But I think
I think the hopeless
leader of the country, in the sense that, I mean, what are the major issues that pertain to people's lives? You know, equality of opportunity and education, taking everybody out of poverty, which we can afford to do in Ireland, making sure that the healthcare system is efficient, you know, properly taxing the very wealthy, you know, regulating the financial system, so that they don't do what I mean. And we've got Gary Stevenson, I mean, the once the most lucrative trader in the world. He's coming at this in the podcast next week for two absolutely compelling episodes. As you know, we've already recorded them. And, you know, that idea that he talks about, like, we were just completely unrelegated. It was bonkers. We could do whatever we wanted to. I mean, I could put on $1 billion trade. I'd only started trading. I was 22 years of age, and the lads in there, everybody was taking coke and booze. We were completely unregulated. We could do whatever we liked. And if we happened to have winners, brilliant. You know, we'd get a £5 or £6 million bonus at the end of the year. And, you know, the cycle continued all over again. You know, until eventually, and we'll come back to this, he realized that what was happening to the world economy, to every country on earth, was a vast and growing inequality, that all of the money was going to the top, and that severe poverty was increasing all over the world, and that this situation was going to get worse and worse and worse. You know, and instead of, you know, dealing with those sorts of problems, we had Leo and, you know, talking about we stand for the squeezed middle. You know, all these vague cliches. We stand for the working person. I mean, you heard wee Simon Harris doing all this as well, you know. And in Simon's case, you know, as convincing, you know, as an audition, as a teenager auditioning for a school play, a teenager who's never acted before. We stand for the squeezed middle, you know. And how dare they?
The Irish flag. We will take back the Irish flag. Simon, fuck off. Do your job.
What does Fine Gael stand for under you?
We stand for standing up for the squeeze middle. For working people, people who get up early in the morning, as I've said in the past, making sure that work is rewarded. We stand for home ownership, and I've spoken about that a little bit earlier on. We stand for rural Ireland and farmers, making sure they have a good income. We stand for safer and stronger communities. A party of law and order supports the Gardaí, supports the Defence Forces. And we also stand up for families, and that's why I've put this particular emphasis on child poverty and well-being during this period.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.